I don't know why, but my screen is like locked. You're not moving. I opened up the camera, but I'm still seeing my Mugatu icon, and it still says starting recording.
See, I
I'm
can
like,
see you now. You're moving. You're moving. I see you. Put your pants back on. Jesus.
Does yours say it's recording?
It says, yes, recording. Started by fall. We're at 2:17.
All right, so then we could just get into this episode.
Okey-doke.
This whole city used to be filled with humans. Families, mothers, fathers. My grandfather worked for a secret organization. When the disaster struck, he sealed us in a protected chamber called Command D. And, yeah, that's how I got my name. He and I were the last survivors. We stretched the supplies as long as we could. We had a few books, some info reels. He taught me all he could. Until he was my only companion. My only friend. His final words were, "You were the last boy on Earth, Commandy. For the sake of humanity, you must survive."
If we're going where I think we are, I doubt any of us will survive.
Journey with them now. Back. Back to the bins.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Back to the Bins Commandy Retrospective. I'm Paul Spitaro, and that person on the other end of the line is the last speaking human I know. Mr. David Pascarella.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine. You're well spoken for the last speaking human.
Yes, I also have a shirt on.
A what?
I have a shirt on. I don't do the whole topless thing.
And for that, those of us, the rest of us who can speak, thank you.
It's a good thing it's not a video podcast.
So today we're out to continue our look at the Commandy series. We're taking episodes 10 and 11 today. Before we get into that, I haven't done any recent purchases to speak of. I mean, there's been a couple little things here and there, but my big thing that I've been doing with my collection is my rebag and board project is now moving along at a pretty brisk pace. I've concluded doing all my Marvel books, which is probably 75% of my collection. I'm on to DC, which is the next big chunk, and I'm up to Doom Patrol. And, you know, they're alphabetical. So
right.
It's moving along pretty quickly. I'm thinking in the next 2 or 3 weeks I will have it concluded. The biggest delay in it is the price of the bags and boards adds up after a while when you're buying thousands.
Bags and boards are a lot.
Yeah. So that's the thing that's made this project go over a year. But it's finally, I'm finally seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, which is cool.
What kind of bags are you using? Are they the resealable ones or just slap a piece of tape on it?
No, I got the resealable ones.
I like those.
And if you buy them in bulk, they're cheaper. So I've purchased in bulk. And then I get the, package came from you and it's too heavy and I can't bring it inside. Because when you buy 1,000 at a time, 1,000 boards is kind of heavy.
What is that going for now, price-wise?
1,000 bags and boards.
Or would you rather not say, depending on who's going to listen to this show?
1,000 bags and boards is probably, it's somewhere between like $160 and $180.
Yeah.
But that's because I'm buying them 1,000 at a time. If I was buying them in, you know, more piecemeal, 1,000 would probably cost over $200.
Did you have to do? Did you get all one size in a bigger size? Or did you get the up? Oh, now I got a downsize from the Silver Age books.
I got all Silver Age bags and boards. And if they're a little, you know, if the more modern books, which I don't have that many modern books. If they are swimming around a little in there, I'm kind of okay with that.
Yeah. Better to have more room than not enough.
Yeah, exactly. The only thing is you get your occasional 100-page giant that it's still a little tight.
But it'll fit in a Silver Age bag.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to... How often have you done this? Is this your first go-round of replacing everything?
Yeah, this is the first, and I suspect the last. I don't think this is going to become a recurring event.
Yeah. I have to do that as well. I did a lot, and then I stopped on that. I started doing it like 2010, mm-hmm. when Mike Bailey was talking about it, but way back on his show.
Right.
I was like, oh, Mike, how often do you think I got to do this?
I mean, the, you know, so-called experts talk about doing it, you know, every like 3 to 4 years. That is that is not happening. Not at the expense of, you know, what it costs for the bags and everything. So I'm hoping these are good and that they'll last and stay in good shape until, you know, forever.
Do you want to say who you ordered the bags from?
Was it BCS, I think is the name of it?
Yeah. That's who I was buying mine from, too.
And I know some of the comic store owners I've talked to have expressed less than glowing terms about their dealings with that company, but they've been okay for me so far.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
So, but I'm sitting, you know, every night I'm sitting there and I'm taking the old ones out, doing this, and then, you know, there's the sound of ripping open the tape on the old ones and then taking off that little strip on the new ones to seal it. And, you know, sometimes Tina's like, yeah, it's kind of like, you know, nails on a chalkboard.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because my wife said the same thing. She hates that sound of the...
Yeah. So most of the time I try to do it when she's not around, but that hasn't... I've failed very often in that.
I haven't... my project I'm still on hold is... I want to redo my shelving that's under the train table and go over to the smaller boxes and even maybe put, you know, two in a row, one in front of the other, because the big boxes are just, it's getting to be too much.
Yeah, I have 5 big boxes because the store that I buy from, or the store I go to most frequently, they had the hard plastic ones, and he was looking to get rid of them, so I got 5 of them. And you know, they are bigger and heavier, but they're also more durable, so I, you know, I'll work with those just for the, you know, just for those 5. I'm not gonna redo the whole collection with that, though.
Yeah, well, the thing is, you have to crawl under the train table, and then I have 2 shelves under there that I built. So to get down from the top shelf. And you're in an awkward position. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, you're not standing.
Yeah. I have my comic book closet. So I'm lucky that I had that space. And it's really not so bad there.
Well, my acquisitions have been more in the toy end lately. I haven't added anything else.
Well, you know, you showed me before we started recording your 2 new Superman figures, which are cool.
Yes, I got the classic version of Superman from McFarlane DC Multiverse, and I got the Superman and Crypto, which is, as I like to call it, though Mike Bailey doesn't like that, the mullet Superman from the 90s.
Well, Mike will, I'm sure, deal. Yeah, I haven't gotten any new figures to put out for a while, but you never know. Christmas is coming.
I got a bunch on order from those Superpowers line. I'm very excited.
Well, Scott, I'm sorry, go ahead.
They released a 3-pack of the Golden Age figures of Our Man, the Green Lantern, Alan Scott, and Starman.
Mm.
They really look sharp.
Sounds good. Sounds cool. I used to have like a JSA grouping And I had added the Kingdom Come Superman to it to, you know, kind of fit him in with the JSA because it looked more like the Golden Age look. But I don't even know what happened with those. They may have gone away when I moved. I'm not sure. But and then Scott was saying that they're coming out with figures from the old Atlas series from the 1970s. I'd like to see what those look like.
Well, those are the Migos, right?
I think so, yeah.
I'm curious to see what they come out there as well.
I mean, you would think they'd have the Brute and they'd have, what's his name, Tiger Man. I can't even think of the different series that they had, but there's probably about five or six that would be pretty cool to own.
Yeah, I have tried to control my Mego purchases and just limit it to the those 50th anniversary Superman related figures. Mm-hmm. I got the Brainiac, I got the Bizarro, the Fleischer limited one, but I think I have to limit it.
the problem is you start running out of space to display them, and then
right, housing shortage.
Yeah, then I know. You know, at one point I got to the point where I said, well, anytime I get something new, that means something old has to go away. So anything new I get has to be better than what I have now. Otherwise, why would I want to make something go away?
Well, I finally have caved and moved some of the wall decor into the train room.
Mm.
Because I bought another bookcase. That's how I solved that shortage of space.
I also have a shortage of wall space, but, you know, these are definitely first world problems.
To say the least.
So let's
no
let's,
one's under attack by mutant bats is what you're saying.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Let's take a look at that. let's visit with our friends, the mutant bats. So you have issue 10, correct?
I do. So do you want to bring it in?
I think I already brought it in a while ago.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, let's jump on in. We're going to do Commandy, The Last Boy on Earth, Episode 10. Cover dated October of 1973. I turned 2 when this issue came out. On sale date of July 10th, 1973. For a whopping 20 cents, 2 thin dimes. Our writer, penciler, and editor is Jack Kirby. Our inker is Mike W. Arroyo, courtesy of Mike's Amazing World. And our episode is entitled Killer Germ. Picking up where we left off last issue, tracking site, the inside of the giant globe that was once built by NASA for a journey into deep space. Having never made it into space, the globe now serves as a refuge and a home for Ben Boxer, Renzi, and Steve. Their Commandy and company find themselves under attack by savage man-sized bats who have forced themselves into tracking site. Enraged to a maniacal fury, the bats gouge and tear their way into each metal chamber. And finally, charge our heroes and the malevolent creature called Misfit. The physically weak Misfit becomes an easy target for the bats. When suddenly a surge of mental energy clobbers the bats. Before the bats can rally, Ben Boxer, Renzi, and Steve trigger their cyclo hearts and activate their fission powers, becoming armored beings as strong as steel. As the trio wade into battle, Commandy withdraws, seeking shelter for the wounded Misfit. During their getaway, Commandy can't comprehend why the bats are so eager to break into tracking site, since it's like a creepy tomb. Misfit comments, "That is well put, and in the end, it shall be their tomb. And the Earth's tomb." Commandy secures Misfit in a vault at Misfit's direction, and returns to the fight, not realizing he has secured Misfit in a vault with a Morticocus virus sample. Misfit, though physically depleted, uses his mental powers to unlock the Great Lock, securing the deadliest germ ever bred on Earth. A germ that, once released, can kill every living thing on Earth. As Misfit raises the vial containing the overpoweringly large and sinister germ that contains the power to crumble kingdoms and empires to dust, Commandy arrives at the front of the battle against the bats. The heroes seal off the section, and the trio of metal men fission back to normal. Though they have obtained a temporary reprieve, Ben assesses the situation as close to hopeless, and Renzi votes to abandon tracking site. The situation declines further when Commandy reveals where he has put Misfit. Oof! Ben is shocked to learn that Misfit is in the same vault as the germ, and the bats have become a minor problem now that they must stop another great disaster. Misfit has sealed himself in the vault, and as Boxer and company look for another way in, Commandy is left to distract Misfit and keep him from releasing the germ. The sound of the bats grows ever closer. Commandy tries the door, and to his surprise, the vault door opens. Misfit tells Commandy to come in. Then he won't last a minute when the bats break into the section. Misfit toys with Commandy, telling him he needs to buy as much time as possible to keep Misfit from releasing the virus. Misfit tells Commandy that Commandy wouldn't shoot him, as Misfit is defenseless. And Commandy shoots him right in the head. No, I'm sorry. That's what I would have liked to have seen. Further, if Commandy shoots the vial with the germ, he will only succeed in releasing the germ, which Misfit boasts he's immune to. Soon the bats are tearing their way in, and only Misfit's mental powers hold them back. Misfit boasts that when he releases the virus, everything except the life produced on tracking station will die. Commandy can't believe the planners of tracking site were human, and all that survives of them is a monstrous germ, a mental freak, and three lonely inhumans. Suddenly, the lights grow dim, and a screen above Misfit springs to life. An image from the past flashes into motion. Commandy looks in on the last moments of the planners when the horrible truth of their failure dawns on them. The film run by Misfit shows the last of the scientists, Hiram Boxer, father of Ben Boxer. The ghost from the past explains, "My staff and I have succeeded in containing the ultimate germ, Morticocus. The battle has taken its toll. I am the last human still alive on tracking site." Young versions of the station's trio enter the scene, trying to aid the failing Boxer Senior, who continues, "A long-range program to protect our descendants from all natural dangers will never be finished." He addresses the young Ben, Renzi, and Steve, telling them that they were the program's best efforts. They will be alive, but physically not human. He reveals their work on a mental approach that produced something much less fortunate. Misfit. Before the film can finish, the station trio yank Commandy out and beat a hasty retreat. Ben explains how the bid for survival at tracking site went wrong, and they are going to remedy it now. The site's magnetic repulsion engine rumbles to life, and the four friends escape on the hover jet. The orb that is tracking site rises into the sky, with thousands of tenacious clinging bats as unwitting passengers. As tracking sight fades into the upper strata, an enraged misfit uses his powerful mental force to release the deadly germ. Much to Misfit's dismay, he is not immune to the germ, and his body is left a lifeless husk as the germ consumes his life. The shrieking bats fare no better. Before the germ can consume all life on Earth, the orb that is tracking sight enters the cold vacuum of space, where Mordekaiser shrivels and dies. And that is issue 10, my friends. What'd you think?
So as far as this goes, I feel like I'm a little bit... I think I was not saying it right when we were talking about previous issues where I talked about them ending things too quickly. I'm not looking to have decompressed storytelling where you just drag this on and on and on. I think the story we got here is decent quality and all of that. But I think the problem I have is that he's closing the door to these concepts, like destroying tracking station and killing the misfit. Like, this feels like there's so much more ground to be looked at there. And, you know, the character of the misfit and the whole potential of the tracking station, I feel like it got kind of squandered almost by ending it so quickly.
So I'm going to agree with you. So.
It's not that, like I said, not that he's running the story too quickly. I think he's just coming to these conclusions. Now, you know, I don't know if at some point it's going to be like, well, I wasn't really dead, you know, something like that, and things are going to come back, because, I mean, that was the way of comics forever back in the day, you know, where they'd kill off a villain and they were back two issues later. And now, you know, no death lasts forever in comics anymore. So they could be bringing back these characters, but it just feels like the conclusions are too final for me.
Well, I agree with you to a point, but whereas we left the Lions last time, which that also I felt I would have liked to have known more.
But I think we can go back there.
We can go back, right?
He didn't have the Lion's Island get, you know, nuked.
Right. And that's the equivalent of what they've done. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, unless it falls back to Earth.
Well, I mean, they have the misfit basically being, you know, turned to dust, effectively. Now, you could have something where, well, you know what? He was this mutated thing, and he turned to dust, and then he rejuvenated. You know, he came back to life and over time. So they could do something like that, I guess. But I don't feel they're going to. I think this is, you know, that character was in for two issues, and now he's gone.
I was more interested in the whole concept of tracking sight.
Yes.
You know, you know, Misfit himself, Commandy could have shot him and been done with it. I would have been okay with that.
Well, tracking sight almost has like a DS9 quality to it that, you know, you could do a lot of stuff with it where it could start becoming a strategic point and that, you know, the different types of animals are trying to get control of it. It just feels like there was a lot of potential to do stuff that they didn't do.
Yeah, I'll agree with you. You know, a lot of this generally, you know, I get a very strong vibe of Buck Rogers from the original movie, where he goes to, you know, the old city and stuff like that. That's what the vibe I get from a lot of Commandy in general.
I'm not really too familiar with that run of movies or movie serial, whichever it was.
Series.
But you're talking about the Gil Gerard one? I thought you were talking about something even older than that.
Because
this would predate Gil Gerard, I think.
Yeah. By a good, I would say, 7-8 years.
Yeah. So, I you know, this certainly isn't aping that.
But it's aping Planet of the Apes.
I like the artwork in the issue. I think Royer did a better job of inking it here than I've seen in the last couple. And he's got some heavy lines, but they seem to work better here than the last two that we had. The action moves along really well. I think Kirby does, you know, a good job of storytelling here. You know, we get some good Kirby tech. You know, we have the Fantastic Car again. So I'm definitely enjoying the artwork. I'm enjoying the story. Like I said, I just feel like there's so much more that could have happened here. That's really all it comes down to.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a good issue. And, you know, it definitely had that sense of danger between the Mordekaiser germ and the bats. And I think we talked about it last time. The bats seem to be, like, they would be intelligent creatures, like all the other animals, I guess, except that they're rabid.
And that's what's making them insane.
Yeah. So that all falls into place well. And you know, the only thing is, you know, again, they have their onesies. But who wants to see a naked bat?
Now, I wonder, did they have the onesies prior to, you know, were they a civilization and then they went mad from the rabies?
That's what I'm picturing in my head, that they did have a civilization and that they were, you know, intelligent. They may have been violent, I don't know, but that they had a level of intelligence and community, and then they, you know, somehow rabies got spread among them, and then that was that.
See, we could write a whole background on the bats having been this great peaceful society.
You could do a mini series just on the bats.
You know what, when Misfit gets taken out, and I guess the bats too for that matter, do you remember what the hell was it? Godzilla versus the smog monster with the thing would like fly over, like it was like the blob almost, where it would go over the people and leave just a husk behind. Same idea that we see here with the Mordekaiser virus.
Yeah, I think that is pretty much what happens. It just, but I think it's also that the virus, like once it got out in the air, it just, like it was like the blob. It just, mm-hmm. you know, grew in size too.
Yeah.
They don't really show. Oh no, it shows what it does to the bats. You know, you see kind of their skeletal remains.
Like Dracula out in the sun.
And then you get the scene with where they're standing there watching the tracking station go off into the sky, which almost feels reminiscent of Star Trek III when the Enterprise is blowing up and you got Kirk and McCoy standing there watching it.
My God, Ben, what have we done? Well, you had to.
It was them or us, Commandy. I'm glad we won.
See, now you can always bring this back where the thing crashes down to Earth again and the thing comes back to life.
Yeah, well, it could have, you know, safety measures built into it so that it'll soft land and, you know, not crash.
Right. Right.
Well, you know, as long as they keep coming up with clever stories, I guess I shouldn't mourn the loss of Tracking Station or Misfit, but if the stories start going, you know, too far off the, you know, off the charts or whatever, then I'm going to sit there and say, well, you know, you could have gone back to this instead. But we'll see as we go along.
Well, this is only, what, a 50-something issue run, right?
Yeah, I think it's 59, something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
So and I got to look and group? See, as I was doing some of my rebagging, I did see, you know, there's like a DC Comics Presents with Commandy. There's a couple of Brave and Bolds with Commandy. And I want to see, you know, if we get to the point where chronologically we're up to them, then I want to shoehorn them into our look.
Yeah, we should do it in chronological publication order. I mean, we already did, what was it, the Brave and the Bold, wasn't it?
Well, that's what inspired us to do this. So.
Right.
You know, that was an exception. You want to rate issue 10?
I thought overall this one was pretty good. There was a certain amount of tension in it, and even the playing with Commandy by Misfit, where he misleads him into locking him in, up just where he wants to be locked up, so he'll have access to the virus. Where, you know, he pretty much, he out now tells Commander, you know, you need to delay me from releasing this to keep yourself alive. To down to the rescue at the last minute and the sacrifice of tracking station. Yeah, I know I'm doing this backwards from usual. But the story was very solid. It was a good read. It moved. The story I'm giving a solid A-. The cover art, I think it's pretty good. It's dynamic. I like to use that word. The bat is completely menacing. It's along the lines of what was in the book. And I gave the cover a B, a solid B. I don't like the green coloring on it. I wish it was more metallic, a metal type color, silver or, you know, something that would look almost like, you know, out of Buck Rogers. So that's why I knocked the cover down just slightly. The interior art, it's solid art for Kirby. I'm not a Kirby fan particularly, but the art is pretty good. Commandy has a few derp faces in there. But overall, it's a solid, entertaining issue. And I'm going to give the interior art, I'm going to give that a B+. For an overall grade on this, of a solid B+.
Yeah, I'm pretty much in agreement with you. I think the cover is solid, and I do agree. I think it would be improved by having kind of a silver metallic look to the debris that's around. The bat is looking very menacing. You don't really see too much of the onesie. So I'd say a B+ on the cover. The interior art, as I said, I think Royer did a better job of inking Kirby than he has in the last couple. I think the storytelling is really solid. The pacing of the issue is really solid. The individual shots, most of them are very good. It's not A material, but I'd say, you know, solid B. Excuse me. And the story itself, I thought the story moved along, you know, at a fast pace and made you want to see where it was going to go. I'm going to say an A on the story. I really liked it. My biggest complaint about the story is just the fact that the ending seemed too final to me. But other than that, I don't really have any criticism of it. And overall, I'll give the book a B+. So then we can move on to Commandy number 11, where we're getting a little bit of a change of pace. This is in November of 1973 with a 20-cent price tag, the same creative team. The cover, which is shockingly by Jack Kirby and Mike Royer, shows Commandy being fished out of the water by some leopards in a rowboat, and the caption says, "Huh, it's only a half-drowned animal, by crikey. He may not be worth saving." The title of the story, which is actually listed as Chapter 2, is The Devil. Our creative team is the usual suspects. The story opens with Commandy and friends on a hovercraft, but the engine has caught fire, and they're diving fast. We're given a map that shows that they're at the Atlantic Ocean, east of the tip of Florida, and Commandy abandons the craft near a ship with a sign that says Sacker's Department Store. The hovercraft blasts apart, and Commandy is thrown clear. He's knocked out and floats to the surface, where the rescue shown on the cover occurs. On to Chapter 2, where the leopard captain, who's named Bly, B-L-I, is advised that Commandy is able to speak. He asks about his friends and is slapped for his trouble. But Bly whacks the mate and says he won't stand for the mistreatment of the animal and that there's no telling how much he's worth in cold cash. At this point, there's a strange sound that the mate says is the devil. The captain indicates that most of the cargo is live, and they walk out apoplectic at the thought of talking with an animal. Commandy is being held with a wrist shackle and manages to wriggle out of it. He starts to explore and finds pre-disaster artifacts, such as telephones, cameras, tape recorders, and other such items. He makes his way past a room of leopards, watching a cartoon. He then listens in on a conversation between two leopards discussing their trip into Devil Country. They then go into the hold, where the cargo is revealed as slaves. On one side, there's a large group of humans, and on the other, there's various animals, and they're expressing a clear fear of this devil, which we now see, albeit covered with a large tarp, and being held at bay with some type of powder on a pole. Then we go to Chapter 3. As he looks on, the captain and his mate come up from behind, and Commandy gets a boot, pushing him towards the devil. When up close, he's exposed to the powder and significantly weakened by it. The captain orders that he should be chained and put in with the other captives. The ship arrives at what was once a Florida resort city, and the captives are marched off. But Commandy manages to grab one of the slave masters and take his weapon, which he uses to have him released from his slave collar. He makes a quick getaway, dodging gunfire, and falls down some stairs. He smells the odor from the powder and realizes that he's down where the devil is kept, which leads us to Chapter 4. As Commandy spies on the devil's keepers, another tries to surprise him from behind, but Commandy gets the better of him, and then the other keepers flee and make a decision to free the devil. Commandy makes a decision to free the devil. He does so, and the beast tears out of the tarp covering it to reveal that he's a giant insect looking kind of like a grasshopper. Next month, the devil and Mr. Sacker. So we have a total change of pace here on what we had in the previous issues. It's a different type of story, a different type of adventure. I was initially very hesitant and questioning the Captain Bly and the Arr Matey kind of thing out of him. But I still got a kick out of the story, and I'm very curious to see where we're going with this devil giant bug. Is it going to be intelligent? Is it going to be able to communicate with Commandy? Are they going to team up somehow? Or is it going to be, a giant bug that's just, looking to eat everything or whatever? I'm not sure what to expect out of this. What'd you think?
I think it would have been great if when he took the top off, it started to sing When You Wish Upon a Star. Yeah, it was... I'm starting to see the pattern with this is there's always some almost like off-screen problem that has developed. When we last left them, they seemed like they were just heading off, and all of a sudden now they have some kind of damage that they're going to crash. And Commandy always winds up alone.
Yeah.
I mean, the pirate idea, I get. I'm trying to think back to when I was a kid. Were pirates still a big deal? They must have been, right?
I think they were still popular among young kids.
So I guess, that makes sense going with the pirate, but the whole Captain Bly is a little too right on the nose.
It is. But like I said, and I was very skeptical when I started to see that, but I still ended up enjoying the story, and it's not that I enjoyed that. I enjoyed it despite that.
Right. Now, looking at the map, see, I always get a kick out of the maps that they finally, they give us so we can see what the world actually looks like. You think Scott's house is still around at this point?
Scott's is, but Bill's is blown away.
God, yeah. Jeez.
But Bill is still sitting there.
With his Avenger books.
Yeah.
I do get a kick out of the name of the department store, Sackers. We sell anything to anybody.
Works for me.
So do they have, they must have some limited way of generating power, right?
It would seem so.
Because initially I had the opinion that that wasn't really a thing anymore.
Well, there was a show not that long ago, sometime after Lost, but you know, relatively recently, but there was something where, like, for some reason, all the power in the world went dead.
Revolution.
Yes.
I watched that.
And I think it was more of a quality concept than a quality show. But just the idea of how it would just throw the country into a total chaos if we couldn't generate power, I found to be a fascinating concept.
Yeah. So I guess in this world, power generation is more limited, but it is possible.
Yeah, there is some forms of power somehow.
It's funny how, you know, the items you see in the background that they've, I guess, stolen, the relics, really look like they're in pristine condition. The pickup truck, the motorcycle. So, I mean, I guess they're able to... Well, they have vehicles. So I guess if you wanted an antique...
It makes you think that the Great Disaster was more of a thing that affected living beings and not property.
Right. Right. Yeah, because it is a paddle wheel boat that's driven by power that they've got. It's not a sailboat.
Unless they have, it's a fascinating some of these, concept. Unless they have some of these slaves somehow creating the energy to get to the paddle. I doubt that, but it's interesting to know whatever this powder is, too. I guess there's probably different powders you could use when you have an infestation of insects, and that would be what they'd be using here.
See, look, they call it powder, but doesn't it look more like something burning?
Yes.
You know, like a smoke.
Almost feels like, you know, like an incense kind of thing.
Right, that's what I'm thinking. Almost like they say bees, don't they use smoke or something to...
Yeah, they do.
That makes sense. The reveal is interesting. Of it being a big... that's supposed to be like a grasshopper, right? Or a praying mantis or something?
I'm thinking giant grasshopper, but or a cricket.
Jiminy crickets.
But, you know, I think in issue 12 we're going to find out more about this creature. Like I said, I haven't read it. I'm curious to see, you know, can it communicate in some way? Is it intelligent?
It bites Commandy's head off, and that's the end of the series.
That could work.
The next 40 books are all just, you know, Ben Boxer lamenting the death of Commandy. Yeah, well, it's interesting. It does, like I said earlier, there seems to be a pattern to these. And I'll lay money on the table that next issue Ben Boxer shows up.
It could be. I am, you know, from a technical point of view, I'm thinking Royer has found his comfort level with Kirby now, because the inking again looks to be similar to the last issue. I think it looks like it's pretty good quality. So I think there's a comfort level that they've reached, the two of them working together.
Yeah, I would even say the art is a step up in this one. Slightly.
Except
the characters is just so... It's really like Pirates of the Caribbean with animals thrown
in. It reminds me of... I remember, you know, like seeing the issues, but not actually reading some of them. But like when they had the Planet of the Apes magazine, and you'd have, you know, apes wearing like Davy Crockett hats, you know, and different things going on, that it was like, really? Is this really going on? And it almost feels like that, like with these leopards taking on the pirate persona.
Are those the original Planet of the Apes comic books that are like in a magazine?
Yes, magazine-sized.
Okay.
And they go, you know, they definitely go all over the map as far as, you know, the storytelling and everything. Some of them are excellent, and I'm sure some of them are just extremely silly. I haven't read all of them, though.
Well, you know what? In all honesty, those are probably closer to the original book Planet of the Apes than the movies.
Yeah, quite possibly, because I know, you know, in the book they flew planes and had cars. You know, it wasn't the throwback society that we got in the movies.
It's the A3000, big is back.
I like the way that throughout this story he keeps it hidden as to what this devil is.
Yeah. Well, but it builds the tension to it.
I wonder if we're going to get something where, you know, like, if you look at, you know, locusts or things like that, they, when they come, they're like, you know, millions of them. And I wonder if there's going to be something where this thing has, you know, has a family somewhere.
Right. If he's going to call for reinforcements.
They'll start clicking away, and the next thing you know, all of a sudden, they're all coming in. And yeah, they all died. The end.
And they all died happily ever after. I guess that could be a locust. I don't really know what a locust looks like, to be honest with you.
I think they look similar to crickets. Hmm. To my eye, but what do I know?
And what the hell were they going to do with this thing is what I'd like to know. Sell it to, like, a circus?
I think it was, I don't know about a circus, but I think they were going to sell it.
Huh. Interesting. Well, he manages to leave these off. We are always curious as to what's coming next.
Yeah, which is, you know, there's an art to that. You know, I was reading something where they were commenting about, just recently, you know, on some Facebook post, they were commenting about Kirby and his writing skills. And they said, you know, what the popular conception is, which I usually agree with, that Kirby is a great concept guy, but as a scripter, he left something to be desired. But so far in the series, I don't really have any problem with his scripting.
Yeah, no, I would be right there with you.
So I guess we can rate this one too now. The cover is well drawn. As I mentioned on many occasions, I hate the fact that the top is cut off from it. There's no reason in my mind why it just can't have that sky blue going right to the top. But anyway, I think it's well drawn. My biggest problem with it is just the whole concept of these pirate leopards. But I like the way they're drawn. I think it's fairly dynamic. I'm going to say a solid B on the cover. The interior art, I think it's very solid also. I'm going to say a B+ on the interior art. And the story, despite its silliness, it kept me moving along. And I was curious to get through it, and now I'm curious to read the next issue. So it's serving its purpose. So I'm going to say a solid B on the story, and I'm going to give the book overall a B+.
I'm right there with you. I gave the cover a B as well. It's not really going to be higher for me because I don't really care for pirates, and this would not have been something as a kid that would have attracted me to purchase it. But it's, you know, it's dynamic, it's well drawn, it's in the book. It's a solid B. The interior art, I think it's a slight step up from last time. I get it. There's certain things in here I really like. I like the map because I like to see where we are, what's changed, and what's going on. That splash page with the Sacker's department store, boat, thing, whatever the hell it is, it's just got so many...
It's got so many nooks and crannies that it's like a Thomas's English muffin.
Right. I mean, if you look at, like, the bridge where the captain is, it almost looks like he's driving out of a toaster oven. It looks like it's just built out of all kinds of wacky stuff, and it's fantastic. Just jumping through it. I really dig the art on this. Yeah, I like the whole idea that it's called the Sackers Company. Not just, you know, Sackers, like, or Blythe, but Sackers Company, like they've registered in the state of Delaware.
I think we're going to get something more on that, because at the last page it says, don't run for the exit, reader. Stay for the next issue and the most unusual department store sales. The Devil and Mr. Sacker.
I can't wait to hear see that. So, yeah, I like the art, A minus. The story, I think I've already said, I like it, liked it as well. I gave it an A minus as well. And this one's taking a notch up for an overall rating of an A minus.
Oh, cool. So we are going to go back before the Great Disaster for a few episodes, and then we're going to come back and get back to the Great Disaster and what happened to Commandy and Sacker's department store. But in the meanwhile, thank you everybody for listening, and we'll catch you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to our show, and we hope you'll continue to join us each and every week for more good old-fashioned comic book back issue awesomeness. You can contact Back to the Bins to leave feedback, comments, questions, suggestions, and criticisms via email at bins@twotruefreaks.com. or by joining the Back to the Bins group on Facebook. Back to the Bins is a proud affiliate of the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network, which you may find at www.twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is a registered trademark of DiManzo Corp of Milan, Italy. All rights reserved. Please take a moment to stop by the twotruefreaks.com site and check out their many other fine podcasts, won't you? Thanks. And we'll see you next week.